Welcome to the Genesis Church podcast. We'll have more information at the end of the podcast, but for now, please enjoy this week's teaching.
Hi, everybody. I'm Pastor Allie. I am pastor of kids and teens here. So today we're going to do something a little fun and different for the sermon text. We are going to do some storytelling with shapes. So our kids are familiar. We've done, I'll get it in just a sec. Thanks, though. We've done this storytelling through Holy Week, and now we have a special one for Easter. So while I set this up, it might get a little crazy when you, oh, we have Mr. Will here. We have some Tangram storytelling sets. So you're going to want to have one to follow along, for sure, kids. And then if we have any extras, we've got some for grown-ups, and we've got some that are silhouettes. We've got some that give you the answers. So raise your hand if you would like one or need one while I do this magic. And can I get a Christ is risen? Yay. All right, two more. Oh, we got one of you, and we got one of you. Okay. Yes, we also have these little card thingies. And, well, they should have also had the story and the shapes with them in the square thing. We also have templates to make your own Tangrams, kids. So if you get bored of your wiggle bags, they're out there by, or on the table by the window and the kids' stuff. Okay. Why should we set this? Let's go here and here. All right, can everybody see the shapes?
Yes.
Fabulous. Okay, so today is Easter. Okay, we've got extras up here in case anyone needs it. So the first shape we're going to make is the tomb shape. Ooh, that might be loud. Sorry. Is this loud in the microphone? My shapes? Okay, maybe it's just me. Okay. Bear with me. So Jesus shared the good news of God's love everywhere he went. Oh, I apologize. Is this annoying? Okay. I feel like hyper aware of how annoying it is up here. Yeah, so Jesus shared. Guys, I promise I'm good at stuff. Let me just do this, then we can start. Oh, that's okay. I had a whole flannel graph situation, but it was so tiny, not everyone would be able to see it. So we improvised this morning. And maybe that was not the best choice. Okay, here we go, making the tomb. Okay, so Jesus shared the good news of God's love everywhere he went. But not everyone thought it was good. This news made some very rich and powerful people very nervous. Ooh. So they made a plan to have Jesus killed, hoping everyone would just eventually forget about him. And when Jesus died, many people who had loved Jesus, whose lives have been changed by Jesus, cried. That was the story of Good Friday. And so a few of Jesus' friends wrapped his body in cloths and placed him in a nearby tomb. Early one morning, Jesus' friend Mary went to visit the tomb. When Mary arrived, she was shocked to find the huge stone had been rolled away from the tomb. Worried and confused, Mary ran to tell the other disciples. So now we're going to make Mary. Mary's running. This tape was the wrong choice. It's so crinkly. But you know what? This is like building the anticipation of the resurrection. So, yeah, this was a purposeful choice. Oh, thank you. That would be wonderful. Thanks. Teamwork. Okay, well, here we got her little ponytail. And we got her head. Her floating head. And we've got one arm. And can I have the big one? Thank you. Body. Wow, look at Mary go. So, does this look right? Yeah. So, what did Mary do? She ran. Mary ran to tell the disciples about this crazy, amazing news. But guess what? Peter and another disciple didn't believe Mary. Rude. So they ran back with her to the tomb. So here we have a new shape. Yeah, thanks. Teamwork. This will get easier the more we unstick them. Okay. Oh, I need this one. No, I need this one. So now we're going to make the disciple running. I wonder if anyone can make this shape faster than I can. What? Okay. I feel like Harbor should be up here doing this storytelling. That's true. It is hard with the bigger pieces. Ooh, I don't know if your foot's going to fit. Yeah. Okay, imagine that's a foot. So there's going to be a lot of running in this story, huh? So they ran and they ran and they ran. So Peter and the other disciple didn't believe Mary, so they ran back to the tomb. And now we're going to make our tomb shape again. Is this fun yet? Whoa. Ah. Yeah, we're like super professional here. Oh my. There we go. Thank you, Krista. Okay, so let's make that tomb. Yeah. You're done? Oh my goodness. Harbor is the tangram master over here. Okay, oh, and we don't need this one because there is no stone in the tomb. When they looked inside, they saw that it was true. Oh, Mary was right. Jesus' body wasn't there. So then the two disciples walked back to where they were staying, wondering about all they had just seen and experienced, while Mary stayed behind. Don't worry, we're not going to do a walking shape. But we are going to do another shape. This is going to be a question mark. Do we have any guesses as to why this next one is a question mark? For those who have the silhouettes, good luck. I can't even do those ones. Thank you. Question mark. Thank you. Thank you. That was the only one. Oh, yeah. So, Mary had stayed behind, and she was full of tears and big feelings. And when Mary looked inside the tomb again, this time, she saw two angels. Oh. And they asked her, "Why are you crying? Why do you think Mary was crying? Anyone?" Confused? Yeah. She's probably like, "Oh, where'd my BFF Jesus go?" All right, this is going to be our last shape of the story. It ends with another running shape, but we've already done that, and I'm not going to make you sit through that again. So try and guess who we're going to make now. As we build it, you might get an idea. It's a triangle. For now. Wait. Yeah, that's right. Oh, here we go. Okay, what is this starting to look like? Talk to your neighbor. All right, thank you, Kristen. Whoa! Who said that? Holland? Oh my goodness, you are so, so right. It does look like an angel, but this is our pal Jesus. Wait, but I thought Jesus died. Yeah, you did, Jack. So just then, Mary turned and saw someone who she thought was the gardener, but it was
Jesus.
Crying and laughing, Mary gave Jesus the biggest hug ever. She couldn't believe her friend and teacher was actually alive. How did that happen? We don't know. So then Mary ran again, and she ran faster than she ever had in her whole entire life to tell the disciples this amazing news that Jesus isn't dead anymore. Can I get a woo? Yay! Jesus isn't dead anymore. He's right here, and doesn't he look great? Okay, thank you for telling that story with us. You all are wonderful. And now, Pastor Kara, taking it home.
Valley, a round of applause.
I'm just going to set Jesus over
here. That sounds
great.
For you.
Everyone can stare at him. Sweet Jesus.
This was Allie's brainchild, not to be confused with her child, Junior here, but her brainchild for Illustrated Ministry this year, too. So we are not the only recipients of such goodness, but like the whole world is. So thanks, Allie, for... Oh, friends, good morning on this lovely Easter morning. Did anybody else see the sunrise this morning? And like, at least where we were, it was beautiful. In fact, my husband was a little freaked out because I like was in the kitchen and shouted. I was like, "Oh my gosh." He thought something was wrong. And I was like, "Do you see how beautiful that is?" He was like, yeah. Anyway, we all respond differently to beauty, and that is okay. Well, I am a lead pastor here at Genesis, and whether you're joining us here in our Bursting at the Seams Chapel, or if you are joining us online, welcome, and happy Easter. Before we get going this morning, I want to say happy Trans Day of Visibility to our siblings, sending all love and light and goodness for the ways that you show up as an image bearer of our divine creator. So, I read a lot of poetry this week, as I usually do before writing a sermon, and honestly, I could have just stood up here and read you poetry about Easter the whole time, so I made a little appendix for you that has some poems and blessings that I found particularly life-giving to me this week. And I'd love if we could start this morning to ground ourselves a little bit by looking at the breath prayer that's at the very top. And if you're unaccustomed to breath prayer, this one is from Black Liturgies, and Cole Arthur Riley gives us a most beautiful book. If you haven't read it, check it out. If you need a copy, we've got extras upstairs. But so on the inhale, we're going to breathe in, God is alive. And on the exhale, we're going to think the words, and God's breath is freedom. So inhale, God is alive. Exhale, and God's breath is freedom. Let's do that again. God is alive, and God's breath is freedom. For those of you who are in the room and sometimes have some wiggles, just know it is always okay to do what you need to do. If you need to stand up and go out in the breezeway, if you need to do a little wiggle in your seat, that's okay too. Sometimes our bodies, it's a lot to sit and be quiet or pay attention, right? For that long. So the gospel writer, as Allie shared with us in the scripture passage today, tells us that Mary walks to the tomb early on the first day of the week while it was still dark. So she's wrapped in the fog of grief and with a lack of physical light. Mary approaches the final resting place of her beloved teacher and healer and friend. Why do we think that Mary went when it was still dark? That's an all play out to all of you. Yeah. Why do we think she went when it was still dark?
Because there were guards.
Yeah. Stacy. She wasn't sleeping anyway. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Any other ideas about why maybe she went when it was dark? Didn't want to miss it. Yeah. I think, too, that there... It's not necessarily darkness, but along what Stacy was saying, that, you know, when we're in the midst of grief, sometimes you just want to be near where the person is that you've lost. And so you're not sleeping, and it's that time of night, and so you might as well go anyway. And while Mary is moving through the darkness around her, life is stirring in the darkness of the tomb, where the great mystery of all mysteries is taking place. And whether this is a little sacrilegious or not, but I imagine it not unlike the doctor regenerating in Doctor Who. So emerging from the TARDIS as someone wholly restored, full of the memory and the power and the newness, all wrapped up in this one singular person who may be taking a different shape. And as Mary, the companion, then is outside the tomb weeping, wondering how this place of stone and finality could contain all of her hope. I don't need to tell you what it feels like to be Mary. We've all seen enough disappointment and death and loss to know what it feels like to walk in the darkness to that place where reality crushed our expectations. Those early in the morning hours when the world is still quiet, when you are full of grief or questions or worry, those moments, they seem to stretch on forever. But the gospel writer tells us the darkness is the place where Easter begins. Only in the darkness can the first flickers of light be seen. And as Barbara Brown Taylor writes, whether it is a seed in the ground, a baby in the womb, or Jesus in the tomb, new life starts in the dark. New life starts in the dark. So Mary runs to the disciples. Peter and John arrive at the tomb. And of course, I'm so curious about their role in the story. There's no conversation. I'm going to move this back because I keep stepping on it, Will. Sorry. There's no conversation recorded here. There's just a lot of urgency. And of course, fact checking because they don't believe her. And they disperse. And then it makes me curious, too, how they might have felt later when she returns to them and says she met Jesus. Do they believe her then? Are they sorry they left? Do they wish they had remained as well? Because Mary remains, so they leave, they go home. And she decides to investigate further, encountering angels and Jesus, who thinks she thinks is the gardener, because she's looking continually for answers. Her grief giving way to pleading. And Jesus says her name, and everything changes in that moment. She comes face to face with the impossible. When Mary returns to the disciples after meeting Jesus, Dr. Caroline Lewis writes, she doesn't offer them a third-person, impersonal, doctrinal statement about Jesus' resurrection. Instead, there's no treatise here, right? There's no 95 theses. There is just Mary, a first-person witness to what she experienced. And her words are simultaneously an announcement about what she saw and a statement of belief in her promise of future life with Jesus and with God. Because what Jesus told them was true after all. Within the depths of grief and confusion, she sees a sign of new life emerging, her own. A seed of hope bursting out of the soil like a crocus, a tiny flicker of an ember in a fire that was thought charred and dormant. And the beauty of this mysterious, glorious movement that happens at the tomb is that we get to encounter resurrection too. We are reminded, you know, we retell this story year after year, but it reminds us that when the path seems thorny and impossible, and possibly not even a path at all, God makes a way in the unending love of Jesus, and we are changed. Mary shows up at the tomb, and by the end of her time there, she and everything about her life is transformed. And in her astonishment and grief and questions, we find mirrored our own stories. The frenetic pace in trying to find her friends, to let them know that Jesus' body is missing. Her confusion over where he's gone, her desire to grieve and to honor her friend, and her fear about what's next. She refuses to withdraw from the situation, regardless of her doubt and devastation. She stays close by. She bears witness to what happens next. Like her ancestors, Rizpah and Shiprah and Puah, she insists on honoring and protecting Jesus' body. And she later proclaims the mystery of what she encountered in verse 18, "I have seen the Lord." We've been journeying through the wilderness this Lenten season, finding solidarity with other travelers, encountering provision and community as we sat around these metaphorical campfires to whisper aloud the stories that we've lived. We've been reminded of our mortality and of the need for us to lean closer into communion with the natural world, with one another, and with Jesus. Friends, the wilderness, the spiritual wilderness, contains multitudes. It's where we learn who we are. It's where we learn who God is. It's where we learn to explore what it means to keep trying, to keep listening, to be grounded with the created world among us. And in all of it, if we keep noticing, we see signs of a new life and new beginnings all around us. Maybe not at first, maybe not for a long time. But if I believe anything at all, it is that our God is one of fresh starts and do-overs and resurrection and the long and slow work of a life of faith. Mary shows us what it's like to show up and to remain, even when it's tough. She shows us what it's like to notice resurrection when it announces itself. And with that, the possibility of hope emerges. These moments of resurrection and hope might feel different for each of us. Sarah Bessie, who is my best friend, but she doesn't know it, she writes this far more eloquently than I, so I'm going to use some of her words here. Sometimes resurrection feels like the arrival of spring. The kind of disgusting blankets of crusty snow have melted, and everything is kind of muddy and mucky, and there's maybe some leftover salt on a typical winter on the edges of the roads. And then one day, a brave little flower pokes up from the brown, hard ground. and you catch sight of it, and you point it out to your neighbors, or yell aloud, and your husband thinks that something's wrong. But you announce it to your neighbors and your children, and you grin all day because a little flower is up. Spring is almost here, and then we watch for the next few crocuses, their lavender and white and gold cups reaching out of the tundra of our winter, the sun's warmth just enough for them to emerge. Sometimes resurrection feels like walking slowly with a toddler. You have to stop and examine each new flower or leaf or blade of grass. You have to be on the lookout because every gum wrapper and cigarette butt needs to be swept away from those little fingers. It feels disorienting to be noticing everything and to be moving so, so slowly. It seems like it would be easier to sweep that toddler up and to move quickly to where you want to go. But this is how we learn, and this is how we teach. As we wander at this pace instead of our normal stride, we find ourselves walking right into who and where we were meant to be all along. Our lungs take in the air, our feet are on the ground, and a child keeps saying to us, "Look, look." And you are beginning to finally see. Who knew an acorn could be such a wonder? Sometimes resurrection looks like a good, deep clean of the house. First, we have to admit that there's dirt and there's mess, and we have to stomp around our house asking if anybody else realizes there's a mess or if they were born in a barn. And then we have to scrub and scour, our hands growing tired, but we're setting things to order and to beauty. The whole time we're working, the windows wide open, the curtains are lifting with the breeze, and everything in the house feels like it's waking up. We're breathing well. We're remembering how far something simple as soap and water will go to making us feel a bit more ordinarily grateful. Sometimes resurrection feels like standing in front of the Eucharist table before someone who loves Jesus too. Holding your hands open, cup to receive without striving, without grasping. It can feel like the goodness of bread and the act of dipping that bread into a bowl of juice. It feels like lowering your head to hear them remind you again that this body is for you, this cup is for you, even you. Sometimes resurrection is like being in love for the first time or for a beautiful, choice-filled long time. Sometimes it looks like good food with good friends, telling the stories that make you laugh until you lay your head down on the table and tears stream down your faces. Sometimes resurrection looks like a therapist's office and a box of tissues and learning to tell the truth about your own life. Sometimes resurrection looks like church. Sometimes it looks like the wilderness. Sometimes it looks like the ocean. Sometimes like the mountain. Sometimes it looks like a small creek in your backyard. And then the next time you find resurrection, you're in a prison handing out diplomas, and you're in a hospital rocking babies, and you're in the hospice quietly humming, "It is well with my soul," under your breath while you say goodbye. Sometimes resurrection can look back at the origin stories of our faith and our imperfect communities, and that resurrection can still find much to love even as we walk away. Sometimes resurrection can be making a new path with ancient friends and disruptors of the peace. It can be protests and policy making. It can be wide open tables and misfits and the possibility of healing. Sometimes resurrection can be reclaiming, other times a renunciation. Sometimes resurrection can enfold our beginnings into our evolution. Sometimes resurrection can take the scraps of our life and somehow make a quilt of warmth and beauty and service. Sometimes resurrection surprises us in the cancer center with kindness, or the school fundraiser, or the picket line. Because look at all the ways we are rising to the questions and the hard things of our time with resolution and hope. Sometimes resurrection looks like standing outside the tomb of the one you love, weeping without consolation, only to find yourself in his presence. Sometimes resurrection speaks your name right at the tomb of your greatest loss. It looks like not recognizing him, but then seeing him clearly. And it looks like being told to go tell the story. As a reminder of our own experiences of resurrection, when you leave today, we have seeds and stones for you to take, if you'd like. A big thank you to Rebecca for sourcing the seeds and to Allie here for sharing out of her abundant rock collection for this community. Because whatever spot you find yourself in the wilderness, let these tangible things remind you of your journey. Perhaps you are noticing new life already, and the emergence of flowers can reveal that newness. Or maybe you are in need of the mystery of what's taking place in the dark soil where the seeds are starting to grow, enriched with the ashes of the created world, hopeful that you could at some point experience resurrection when those seeds grow. Perhaps you might choose a stone to remind you of the one that was rolled away from the tomb, a symbol of the breaking of all that holds us captive, revealing new life within. Or a rock might just symbolize the rough places and the hard edges that still exist in your own journey. Or perhaps it will serve as a reminder of hope, a place where God has met you, your own Ebenezer, your own place of resurrection. And as you go from this place today, may you hear Jesus speak your name, drawing you into relationship and into community in the very ordinariness of spotting resurrection in our daily lives, and as we're able to practice hope again. Christ has risen. He has risen indeed. Amen.
Thank you for listening to the Genesis Church podcast.
Our teaching team is made up of men and women who love asking probing questions of each week's scripture portion,
creating opportunities for our community to respond from wherever they are in their faith formation.
We follow the Revised Common Lectionary and a church calendar because they anchor us in something which can hold us no matter what life throws our way.
Our goal is to become ordinary apprentices of Jesus who are learning to love God, ourselves, and others wholeheartedly.
If you have any questions or would like to connect with
us, please visit genesiscov.org.
Thank you.